Hi, this is Rich Lucy in the Drug Enforcement Administration's Community Outreach and Prevention Support section, and I welcome you to this episode of our podcast series, Prevention Profiles, Take 5. I am pleased that today's guest is Kevin Krueger, who is the president and CEO of NASPA, and I'll tell you a little bit about that organization and him right now before I formally introduce Kevin. So Dr. Kevin Krueger draws on more than 40 years of experience in higher education. Since 2012, he has served as president and CEO for NASPA, Student Affairs Administrators in Higher Education. Prior to his role as president, he worked for 18 years as the Associate Executive Director and served as the Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer for NASPA. He has held a range of student affairs positions at Southern Methodist University and the University of Maryland. Dr. Krueger has published and presented nationally on trends in higher education, student success, degree completion strategies for low-income and first-generation students, and change management and leadership in higher education. He is the proud father of two children, one a college senior and the other a first-year student. With that, Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Rich. Good to be here.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to have you today. Throughout my entire federal career, Department of Education, previously Health and Human Services, and now Department of Justice, I've had the pleasure of working with you and your staff at NASPA in various ways, and I'm sure we'll probably get into that a little bit. So it's great to have you here on the podcast. There's a question I didn't formally put down, but I do have to ask you. So as a dad, I mean, I mentioned you're a proud father of two children. Is it interesting to be in the field that you're in and then also see your children in that environment and how they're affected by higher education?
Yeah, it's been an interesting sort of mini case study because, you know, I've been at this work for 40 years. And from everything from their college choice process to the way they're experiencing their college, experience as a student, it's been interesting to sort of see it from the from a different lens. I've learned a couple of, you know, quick anecdotes. You know, and I think any family who has had a child go through the college search process, you realize there's an element of kind of chaos to it, ordered chaos. I decided to sort of let them choose their own journey and not intervene too much, and learned a lot about what they pay attention to, what they read, how they are making their decisions, the importance of the campus visit, the importance of the tour leader who is doing the first tour. All those kinds of things. But I think, you know, more importantly, I think what has tapped me into is, you know, as a father and a parent of college students, I know the really exciting, energizing things that take place as a college student, but I also know some of the pitfalls. And so I've been able to, just engage both my kids in conversations about their life outside the classroom. With my daughter, engage with questions around the issues that we know exist for adolescent girls, and that is a lot of issues around anxiety and depression. Mm-hmm. And so really kind of be a hit those head on. And for my son, it really is about the way adolescent boys and struggle with organization in particular. And then the exposure to what, you know, is our topic today, exposure to substances, alcohol in particular, and other issues that allow me, again, to have a fairly frank and open conversation with both of them about these issues. Yeah. As they progress. So, it's been a learning experience for all three of us. I've chosen not to be a helicopter parent. I always felt like it would be a little embarrassing for the NASPA president to be, sitting in some of the spaces that many parents sit in. So I tend to do this a little bit from afar. Yeah. But it has certainly been a learning experience and one that sort of, you know, matches up against my own understanding of what we know is taking place on college campuses.
Yeah. Well, it definitely gives you a different lens in order to, mm-hmm. to look at this issue.
Yeah.
So
I
appreciate you sharing that experience with us. So I'm going to jump right into the first of our five formal questions. Mm-hmm. So in your time as president and CEO of NASPA, and as I mentioned, you know, that's been since 2012, how has the focus on drug misuse issues on campus either changed or stayed the same among student affairs administrators?
Well, I think there's elements of it that have stayed the same. I think if you sort of look historically over the last 20, 30 years, you can see this sort of thread of work around prevention, and we kind of knew that prevention was a really critical tool and process as how we would address substance abuse on campus. we knew that that paired with, you know, policies and enforcement obviously was important, but that to really make see substantive change in the behavior of students, particularly around the dangerous use of alcohol or other substances, we knew that prevention was going to be really critical. So that I don't think that threat has changed, but I think what has changed is that we know more today than we did, you know, even 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think the science around substance abuse and the kinds of interventions that can make a difference in the student population has really improved, thanks to the work of some great researchers out there. And I think that has then filtered down to the practice itself. And so I think in that regard, we're just smarter and more focused about some of the those prevention efforts. But what hasn't changed is just an understanding that that for many students, substance abuse can be the pathway to some really both psychosocial challenges, but also academic challenges. I think looking at some of the research that Amelia Arias has done at Maryland, University of Maryland, sort of looking at the impact of both the increase, for example, in cannabis use or alcohol use, and the impact that that has on academic performance. You know, one thing that has changed in the academy over the last, 20 years, and really in some cases over the last 5 or 7 years, has been a very focused effort for college and universities across the country to look at student success as a concept that we now articulate fairly regularly. Well, student success can mean a lot of different things, but one of them is measured against some of the outcomes that we commonly think about in terms of degree progress and persistence and completion. And so we also, we look at all kinds of barriers to that degree progress, persistence, and completion. And what we know is students who are struggling with substance abuse has a direct impact on them attending class and time to study, time attending class, absence from class, and ultimately can result in higher degrees of attrition or dropping out of college. We care about this both from a population level in terms of preparing students to be functioning adults and managing some of these psychosocial issues. We also know it has dramatic effects on and direct effects on their academic performance. So we think about that as well. So I think that focus is maybe a little bit more articulated. Mm-hmm. You even hear people talking about sort of an ROI analysis about some of this work, so that the dollars you put into prevention and education can actually result in downstream the retention of tuition dollars with students staying in class and in college more consistently. So I think that kind of analysis has changed. And I think we'll see even more of that as budgets are tighter. And so we begin looking at those outcomes as really key issues. One last thing I would say is that, if you just look at cannabis as an example, I think that certainly is a place where we've seen a lot of evolution from it being, the criminalization of cannabis and the way policies were enacted on campus. And I think now with the evolving landscape of cannabis, both availability and legality, I think that's also changing the way we approach this on campus. We certainly have more headwinds as we try to help students understand some of the negative impact of cannabis use, particularly excessive cannabis use, issues around brain development and again some of those academic performance issues. So I think we are one part of the world and the society, so we are subject also to the evolution of those changes.
Mm-hmm.
Another example would be the opiate crisis that America is facing right now. And while that has not found its way heavily into the college campus, it is touching the college campus in terms of the communities that we touch. It's certainly affecting the families of some of our students, and in some cases, the students themselves. Not to name a college, but there was a university this week, this very week, that has had a number of deaths on campus, some related to suicide, but a number of them related to drug overdoses. And so I think it's a reminder that that our students are not immune from this, and one that requires a lot of diligence and attention.
Yeah, I think that what you've mentioned on this issue of what's changed or not is certainly the issue of substance misuse writ large has not changed. That's been an issue on college campuses for decades, if not centuries.
Right.
But you know, like you said, just even in the last 10 years, what we know from prevention science and how much it's evolved and how we approach substance misuse prevention and the strategies that we look to employ. And I like what you said about the opiate crisis, that, you know, it really, I guess I would like to think that most college campuses do not exist within a vacuum.
Right.
I know that sometimes if there's a crisis, there is that sense that they become insular. But, you know, campuses really are a part of the community. Mm-hmm. That's the whole idea. We've been trying to spread that word, that the campuses are indeed, you know, connected to families and communities. And so they need to be part of what's going on in the larger community as far as substance misuse prevention goes.
Yeah, I completely agree, Rich. I think it's easy to look at, you know, you might look at a data point, and, you know, a national data point, and see the number of students who are experiencing some sort of opiate addiction issue, and you might think that number is, well, fairly low. It might suggest that, well, we can just turn our attention elsewhere. But I think you would raise, you know, I think the real point here is it's not just the students themselves, it's that community. And so these students are, you know, they're living in that community, they're interacting in that community. So even more important to have the educational efforts that we have in place. And again, do you think some of the states where we know we have very, very high opiate use in the community, the potential impact of families and other folks and the constellation around students is important to consider. So, it's clearly a public health issue we're dealing with right now in America. Mm-hmm. And I think that to think that college students are kind of immune from it would be foolish.
Yeah.
And we need to be diligent about, any signs in our college community that attitudes around that are changing in a way that would increase usage. You know, we already know that students have a sense of self-immunity about things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it's not opiates, it's other, you know, there's certainly other substances. NASPA has spent a lot of time on in a coalition around the diversion of ADHD medication, for example. Which, for the average person might think, well, you know, it's prescribed, it's legal, what's the big deal? But every week I get a news digest of cases of students who have overdosed on ADHD medication or misused it to the point that they've been hospitalized, or in some cases, experienced an unanticipated death. The proclivity sometimes students have to design new party drug experiences, and so the combination of ADHD and Red Bull and alcohol and other kind of concoctions, it reminds us that we have a huge educational lift every single semester when we have a new group of students coming in.
Right.
I mean, this is one of the, you mentioned we've been doing this for decades, and I think that the work never stops because, you know, what we know about brain science is that adolescents are in that period of brain development where they're still developing, and the part of their brain that is the slowest to develop is that risk-taking, risk-reward part of the brain. And so, you know, we see that, you know, really, frankly, every day in student behavior. So it requires a real long-term ongoing commitment every semester. Every time you have a new group of students, or reinforcing messages that we've had with students who have, who may not have, embraced that into their own behavior.
Mm-hmm. So I want to segue on to our second question, sticking in the student affairs arena here. So what are your thoughts on how we as a field can transcend this idea of alcohol and drug misuse from being a student affairs issue to a broader institutional issue?
Well, I would say that there's a lot of intersection here between, of course, alcohol and drug abuse issues and the larger constellation of mental health issues that we're dealing with on college campuses. So as we think about the approaches we're taking in general, I think we're seeing a very clear shift in how campuses are addressing this. We know conclusively that just downstream clinical interventions are not going to be enough, that we have to work on the prevention side. And when we think about working on the prevention side, we have to think then about all the ways in which we the campus and individuals in that campus touch students. So not just the counseling center, but for example, I think there's a huge need to engage faculty in this process. Faculty see students more than any other sector of the institution. They see them every day. You know, it's a little bit of overgeneralization, but not too far, that faculty feel ill-equipped and in some cases intimidated to deal with the complexity of some of these issues we're addressing here. And so getting faculty to kind of understand, you know, what is their role? What can they do? When they see a student, for example, who, you know, who is, perhaps has been performing at a high level early in the class, and then suddenly their behavior changes. They may be missing class or coming late to class or falling asleep during class, or their grades went from being, you know, a B plus to a D minus. Something's happening with that student. And so we're really encouraging campuses to engage in faculty development programs that doesn't put them into a clinical role, but puts them into a role of engaging students in a normal conversation about what's going on in their lives, so that if there's something that's tripping up for them, whether that be a mental health issue or anxiety, depression, or substance abuse issue, that the faculty member can guide them to some support. This sort of, you know, it takes a village approach, I think, is really what's going to be required to make a dent in these issues that campuses are really struggling with. So I think that, you know, I think that's one component of it. We need to think more broadly about how we help the broader community interact with students around the places where they're struggling. The second thing is we've also learned, of course, a lot about, I think we've seen campuses think differently about not allowing efforts like this to be siloed. So, you know, it's not just the, you know, the person, the health educator who's in the health center who is managing or dealing with some of the substance abuse issues on campus, but to think more broadly about how that intersects with recreation and wellness and counseling center. And so we're seeing that kind of an evolution of units within the campus that are that have a wellness function to them, that are addressing all these range of issues and looking at multiple departments and a broader effort on campus than just student affairs. And I think that's going to be really critical as we think about the long-term solutions. We know that, you know, we get criticized a lot for silos, and so in some cases it's a good reason for it, because, you know, people have expertise, and that expertise is, you know, it comes from years of study and education. So we're not asking people to play some of these wider clinical roles, but we do think that a broader audience of folks engaged with this is helpful. And again, I'd just have to reinforce that I think faculty really play a critical role. I think that's a place where we have been less effective than in other places.
Yeah, I recently had the opportunity to speak before a group of college presidents in a state that we're both familiar with, New York. And through their state system of universities. And one of the questions I was asked by one of the presidents was, what can we do to help our faculty members? And I said, you know, from my perspective, I think the best thing that you can do to help your faculty members is make sure they're aware of the resources that are available on campus. This is an ideal opportunity for student affairs to work with academic affairs, the health center, and academic affairs. Because just as you said, they're seeing students probably more than any other stakeholder on campus.
That's right.
And we're not asking them to be the prevention, intervention, and treatment specialists.
But if they know
where to point the student, that's the best thing they could possibly do.
Right. Yeah. One other thing, Rich, that I think is emerging is that we're seeing a lot more psychosocial stress for graduate students. We tend to think about this as an 18 to 22 year old issue, undergraduates. But, you know, they went on from being, you know, the same generation, the cohort went from being an undergrad to now the grad students. And in the graduate school life does not have any of the kind of wraparound support services that exist for the undergraduate. There may be a graduate student services person. But we know grad students are struggling from a mental health standpoint and a substance standpoint. We know that stress is a very high stress environment, suicide ideation is actually higher for grad students than it is for undergrads. So I think campuses also need to kind of understand that student behaviors, student issues, evolve from the undergrad to the graduate space, a little more visible. But we need to be attentive to them as well. And so, for example, there's many, almost every campus has some kind of, behavioral assessment team, care team. I've been talking more to campuses that are having their law school student services person, business school students, all these student service folks join the care team once every 3 weeks to discuss challenges they're having with grad students. So that's when I think it's important to, expand our view of this, because that's a little bit of an invisible population I think is one that's really need to pay more attention to.
Totally agree. So as I move on to our third question, I want to zero in a little bit on presidents and other senior administrators. From your perspective, what do you see as the essential skills that presidents and senior administrators need to possess to be effective in providing the campus leadership that's needed around prevention efforts?
Well, this is a good, it's a really good question, because I don't think that from a presidential standpoint that this is enough of a priority for college presidents. We have come to understand, and you have in your work as well, that leadership makes a tremendous difference in terms of how staff and resources are deployed and how some of these efforts are deployed across the campus. And I think about places where college presidents have made, for example, alcohol misuse and abuse an issue. They've seen some remarkable results, and I think that we could use more of that kind of visible, outspoken leadership that accomplishes several things. One is it sends a clear message to students about what's valued and what kind of community they are. It sends a message to the staff who are working in the space that their work is valued and important. And I also think that it then trickles down to the allocation of resources, because if you're really thinking about a comprehensive effort, a prevention effort, then it's going to take some dedicated resources to do that. So that kind of leadership and prioritization, I think, makes some of that possible. Mm-hmm. So I think it's critical, and I know we've learned over the years and that one of the key elements to a successful prevention effort in a space clearly requires that kind of leadership. I think that the challenge is there for vice presidents with student affairs as well, but probably a little less so. I think that certainly given the roles that Vice President of Student Affairs are playing today, they're much more acutely aware of some of the wider range of issues are affecting students' psychological and health overall. Now, I'd say we're probably a little bit probably skewed on the mental health side today. I mean, we just completed our survey of Vice President of Student Affairs, asking them what the top issues are that they're dealing with, and mental health issues is 10 times higher than any other issue rated on campus. Mm-hmm. So that is clearly critical. I think it's also important that our student affairs leaders understand the some of the co-occurring issues around alcohol and drug abuse and mental health. And think about prevention efforts that are not just focused on some of the clinical mental health issues, but also look at those wider range of prevention issues. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something. So the leadership issue I think is critically important. I will say that mental health has caught the attention of college presidents, so that's a good thing. About 80% of college presidents in the ACE survey that was done this year believe that mental health is a bigger issue today than it was 3 years ago, and I think about the same percentage are putting more resources into that. So I think that is a positive thing, but I think we need to broaden the conversation to not be just simply about mental health, but the wider range of issues that are affecting students, like a social development.
So I liked what you said about a college president needing to be visible and outspoken. I hearken back to my time when I worked at the Department of Education, and we used to have our national meeting, our national conference each year, and we had a college president who shall remain nameless, who was a plenary speaker and came in and spoke about her campus's devotion to this issue and all the different things they did on campus. And she spoke for a good 20, 25 minutes with, and from not one single note.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I was in awe watching her, because that said to me, one, she absolutely did her homework and was totally prepared to give that speech. But it also was a little bit more important for me was that she really knew her campus and mm-hmm. what they were doing on this issue.
Right.
And that was just an act of just devotion to this issue that to this day has stuck with me about what a president can do.
Yeah, well, we certainly need more presidents like that. And this is not a knock on presidents. These are complex jobs.
Absolutely.
I think one of the opportunities we face is that, and I think for the vice president of student affairs and the student affairs division is to help the president and other leaders on the cabinet to understand the importance of these issues
mm-hmm.
and what it really means in terms of, again, going back to a subject that everybody can wrap their head around, student success. You know, what does it mean for degree persistence, completion, not just what does it mean for, you know, the incidents you might find on Monday morning after, you know, a weekend of partying, but more, you know, the academic and personal impact that these issues have on students. And, you know, I'll get this a little bit wrong, but I know Jason Kilmer talks about, as he thinks about the population of students who, you know, mostly largely underage students who are drinking, and he kind of breaks them into two groups. You know, one group will engage in underage drinking and in some cases drinking that, you know, to excess quantities,
mm-hmm.
And then graduate and then go back and then sort of go into a normal behavior of alcohol use for an adult,
mm-hmm.
but he really worries about sort of this alcohol disorder that starts in college for another the other half, and then continues onto their work life, and it prevents them from being successful
mm-hmm.
in their jobs, et cetera. He's more articulate about than I am, obviously, but I think, you know, for us also to understand and for college presidents to understand, this isn't just a weekend party issue. This is an issue that can affect the student's ability to get a successful job, to thrive in that job,
mm-hmm.
To be a successful alumni for that college or university. So it has a lot of downstream impact as well. And I think maybe that's an argument that we could strengthen with college presidents.
Absolutely. My fourth question references the Strategies Conference. You know, NASPA has become a leader in our field through the annual Strategies Conference. I've been honored to be on the planning committee for that conference
mm-hmm.
for several years, helping to co-sponsor it through different agencies I worked for. And while the Strategies Conference provides excellent information and skills development for prevention professionals, it seems that we're seeing relatively slower progress in the development of and the testing of evidence-based practices and strategies
mm-hmm.
through research and maybe scholarship. Do you see NASPA having a role in helping to advance the research around drug misuse prevention? And if so, what might that role be?
Well, I think, yes. That's an interesting observation you make, Rich. I think because, you know, one of our goals, of course, is to kind of create that kind of practitioner-scholar model that exists in the same space. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, obviously we have a fair amount of practitioners who are come to the Strategies Conference. But I know that, you know, as we've been on the committee, we're also trying to really elevate and give space for some of the research that's coming out of,
mm-hmm.
You know, a variety of places in higher ed and elevate that so that we that can drive some of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, our whole field is practice to theory to practice, cycle. And I think we have benefited from that. So I think, you know, the biggest thing we can do is create spaces for that research,
mm-hmm.
to be, disseminated and discussed and tested, with a practitioner audience.
Mm-hmm.
I think the place where I think we probably struggle as a field, is that the sources of funding for this kind of research have kind of dried up.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. There was a time when the federal government was fairly involved in this space, and I
mm-hmm.
think that was a really positive development. And so now you're really looking at more pockets of academic programs where this research is valued and where you have scholars advancing this research. And I think that it's a gap for us in the field for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, you're asking a good challenging question for me is where can NASPA play a larger role? And I think that, you know, we could certainly be a little more of a driver in either sponsoring or finding sources of funding for emerging scholars and researchers in this space. And it's probably a good conversation for us to engage in with, mm-hmm. particularly as we see younger researchers and younger scholars who are coming up, who have not yet established themselves, to find some, even some modest resources to advance some new research in this area, I think would be really productive. We are fortunate in our field to have, 175 to 200 graduate preparation programs. Many of them are at R1s. Mm-hmm. So we also have emerging scholars who are coming up who perhaps could identify this as a research agenda. So there may be some things we also could do in working with our graduate faculty and our graduate programs to identify some of the places where this could be applied. Although my guess is that these aren't the programs where you're going to see this kind of science that we're going to need in these. So it's probably involves partnering with some different types of institutions mm-hmm. that have this kind of research interest. But I think I think your observation's a good one. We'll continue to provide space at the Strategies Conference for research because I think it's important. But we need more, right? Yeah. I mean, we need more as we learn more, and so that we don't get stagnate in the ways with which we are linking research to practice.
Mm-hmm. And I want to clarify just a little bit that first of all, thank you. The Strategies Conference absolutely does bring together practitioners and researchers in the same space, which is really helpful for the field. I think that the challenge goes beyond just the college setting. Is unfortunately sometimes the research is lagging behind the need, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that's probably the case for what research is at times. It just takes mm-hmm. time to test the theories and such.
Yep.
I mean, if you were to look at all the different quote unquote lists of effective programs, they really haven't changed much.
over the last decade or so.
And yeah. I think that's where my question was coming from, I think.
I think it's a good question. I think the other observation I'd have is that some of the research that we now see coming, that gets sort of disseminated and talked about is also coming from the for-profit sector. Not that that's can't be a source of research, but we also, we need to ensure the rigor of some of the findings that are getting disseminated from the for-profit sector, and ensure that they, can stand up to good research principles.
Mm-hmm. So, moving on to our last question, and I'll allude back to something you said earlier in the interview with substance abuse, for some, not really enough of a priority for college presidents. And that's because they have so many things being put on their radar screens with so many possible hot topics related to health and wellness that presidents and other senior level administrators must contend with. I'll ask you in our last question for our listeners who are primarily prevention practitioners, probably mm-hmm. I don't know how many college presidents we get tuning in for each episode, but what advice do you have for the program staff to help keep the issue of drug misuse and drug misuse prevention a priority for senior level administrators?
I think that, one strategy or tactic that can be reinforced is either initiating or reinforcing coalitions that exist on campus. Mm-hmm. Virtually every campus has a constellation of individuals who either have expertise or interest for whom this issue intersects the work that they do. I think the more people involved in the conversation, the more awareness is raised, and I think the more attention you potentially can get with for the folks who are actually driving the resources and that kind of thing. So I think that's one thing that comes to mind. Almost every campus and community state does some kind of does professional development around a variety of topics. So you might have the Student Affairs Division in the state of Maine might do something, or there might be sort of statewide meetings, very low-cost drive-in kinds of things. I think there's an opportunity there for to ensure, like, to, you know, to work with your colleagues to identify something unique you're doing on your campus, or a nuance of the issue or the challenge, or some experiences you've had with students, and think about sharing that at professional development events. I think that's another space we can that can happen. I think the other thing I would raise is that where there is good research and where we have good practices embedded in its evidence base, embedded in science, that we may think that is widely known across the field of higher education, but it's not. So there's a lot of assumptions that that practitioners make and leaders make based on well-intended an understanding of the problem, or perhaps an older understanding of the problem. So I think ensuring that the that your own campus has access to some of the most current thinking that is available nationwide, I think, would be another really clear strategy, and not assuming that everybody understands the full range of the current practice and theory to practice approaches that are being used on campus. So I think that would be, almost every campus is sort of vulnerable to wanting to be the best at what it does. And so when there is a good practice, I'm not going to use the word best practice, but when there's a good and effective practice that's being implemented somewhere with some results that have been positive, kind of sharing that within your own campus community, I think, can also help advance the work that you're doing as well. I think that's another piece of it. I think the other thing I would just say is that sometimes you have to build your own reward structures in. So, work with your teams about identifying students or student organizations or peer groups or things that have been really excelling in your campus. Find a way to get that into the award structure that occurs within every institution, so that you can raise the visibility of some of the good work that's being done within your own campus that may be not where some of the campus leaders may not be aware of that.
Absolutely. That's a very good takeaway message and really good advice for our listeners. And as we come to the conclusion of the interview, Kevin, I want to thank you for your perspective on many different fronts. This was not just focused on student affairs. Obviously, that's certainly where your focus is many times. But I hope that the breadth of the questions in our conversation today took a little bit of a broader approach as well. So I just want to say thank you for joining us on the interview. And DEA, I can speak on our agency's behalf, looks forward to our continued relationship with NASPA as we continue to work on this issue.
Great. Enjoyed the conversation, and I appreciate the dialogue. I think it just reinforces, Rich, how critical these issues are for our nation and for the students who are at our institutions, something that we should remain focused on and diligent about, because it really is about graduating successful, healthy, full-functioning adults is going to make our society better. So it's a really important thing for us to focus on.
Absolutely agree. So again, Kevin, thank you so much. And to our listeners for tuning in to this episode of Prevention Profiles Take 5, I thank you for listening, and I wish you a great day.